Welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of July 13th, 2020. Today we're joined by our co-host, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How you doing, Mariah?
I'm well. How are you, Ted?
Good.
Looking forward to talking to you today about shifting baselines in an article written by David Roberts from Vox and generational amnesia and what we can do to help combat that.
All right. Sounds good. So Mariah, there's a sobering concept that I think we should discuss. It's laid out in pretty good detail, as it always is, by a guy named Dave Roberts over at Vox, where he basically talks about how human beings, it's an advantage, I guess. Human beings adapt, right? And they get used to whatever's going on. And then they don't remember how things were before because they've now rationalized and accommodated the new normal. And he says that's kind of a tragedy. Is that, did you read an article?
Yeah,
do you want to
tell
me the story? What's the background here?
Yeah, I mean, it's a hard article to read, right? And, you know, I think reading it, but keeping in mind that there are still things we can do to help this. But the idea here is that we sort of get immune to the poignancy of tragedies over time. And while, you know, one big forest fire might affect us, if they're happening frequently, we don't even notice it. He mentioned the Australian forest fire, which killed, you know, thousands and thousands of species and animals and not thousands of people, but people as well. And it was barely a blip in the news cycle because here's another fire where people are dying. And of course, I'm not saying that, you know, we shouldn't care about it. But that's his point, is that we just start to get used to these terrible things happening. And it can erode our will to act on them. And so the fear here is that with climate change, we might start getting, I mean, it's the, you know, proverbial, you put a frog in water and if you just keep turning the temperature up and up and up and up, before long, the frog is gone and it never realized it was being cooked.
I think that one of the things I found interesting about what Roberts was saying was how there is a consistent belief among climate activists who say that eventually there will be some event that is so catastrophic that all of humanity will wake up and say, this cannot stand. We just can't live like this. And his argument is that that may never happen. That if Hurricane Katrina didn't do it, if Hurricane Maria didn't do it, if the Australian forest fires didn't do it, people just say, okay, you know, that I live in a world where crazy stuff happens. It's really bad, but I mean, that's the reality. And what am I going to do about it? Right? And that people have a tough time remembering before enormous fires in California were just normal. Right? I mean, it was only 10 or 15 years ago, but it's not easy to remember.
Right. And you know, it has to sort of do with this idea that you kind of, as you said, you don't remember. You also may not know what it used to look like, right? I mean, you hear this, back in my day, this happened this way, and so on and so forth. And you think, well, that was, I don't know that. You don't even have a concept of what that means. And one of the things that Roberts talks about in this Vox article is a fisheries scientist in 1995 named Daniel Pauly, who published a one-page article about this thing called shifting baseline syndrome in fisheries. And I don't know that this is exactly what he was talking about, but it reminded me of, you know, the cod fisheries back in the 1850s. I saw this great article that showed pictures of, you know, trophy cod fish. And back in the 1850s and, you know, a couple of decades after that, the cod fish that they held up as trophy fish were almost as big as I am. And you see, as it gets, you know, moves on in time, these people are still holding up their big trophy fish, but now it's like 12 inches. And that's the biggest fish they caught that year. And they don't realize that, you know, 40 years ago, the cod codfish were as tall as we are, right. Or, you know, as big as we are. I mean, maybe not as big as we are, but pretty close to
100-pound codfish,
right? Yeah, because, that you know, that they weren't around for that. That's not part of their sort of everyday existence. And so you start to think that that's what codfish, big codfish, looks like.
Right.
You know, 15 inches is a huge codfish.
And I think that, I mean, there's so many implications of that sort of amnesia. Right. I mean, because each generation, I mean, my son now 26, right. He's never lived in a world where the temperature is below the mean, below the sort of 1960 average. Right. It's always been a warming world for him. The snow is less and less. I think for him, wearing shorts in January is, that's just what people do. I mean, every time I go out in the wintertime here in Boston and you see somebody with shorts on, you say, how far have we drifted? I mean, when I was young, you couldn't go out. It wasn't even like you had a choice. You would freeze if you went out with that kind of clothing on in January, right? But now it seems like people get away with it and yeah, it's fine. That's the new normal. And people don't remember back. They don't appreciate how it used to be. And I think the motivational trigger for recognizing what's being lost is, and I think this is Robert's point, is that there is no trigger, right? Everyone just accommodates because the time scale in which these things evolve is slow compared to human cognition, and therefore you don't see it. Right? It might be really fast on a geological scale of a couple hundred years, but that's not what you as a human experience, right?
Right. Or even if you do see it, it's just your reality. Another example he talks about is you may say there's a certain species that is, you know, very abundant. Well, before it goes extinct, it becomes rare. So if you depended on, let's go back to the codfish example. If you depended on cod, well, as those numbers started to dwindle, you had to shift your target species to a different target species. And because there weren't enough cod for you to, you know, move forward. And then eventually you sort of stopped depending on cod and depended instead on this target species. And so you don't really notice when the codfish, I mean, I'm not saying the codfish are extinct,
right?
But you don't notice when they're gone because you don't depend on them anymore. You found something to replace it. You adapt. Right. And, you know, that adaptation, as you said, it's important. It's important that we can find our way to adapt to some of the challenges that we're facing, but not if you're not doing anything for mitigation. This is a conversation.
But I mean, I think what you're saying is you don't, as the last rhinoceros dies,
right? Yeah.
I mean, you don't realize what you've lost because all that is lost to you and your immediate perception is, oh, there's one animal that used to be there. Now it's not, as opposed to saying there were 10,000 of them. Right. I mean, it doesn't go from 10,000 to zero. It goes from one to zero. And that's a much smaller loss. You don't appreciate the change to the world. And that's kind of a depressing and dangerous concept. I mean, I remember talking about climate change in the early part of this century and making the case that our children would not be able to appreciate the beautiful colors of the maples in the fall, because as the temperature changed, all the maple trees would go away. Right? But it finally dawned on me that those kids in the year 2090, they will never have seen a maple tree to begin with. So they're not going to feel any sense of loss. Right? And yeah, it's up to someone else to sort of say, oh my God, we can't let that happen. And who's that going to be? Right.
Yeah, another real world example came to me of the monarch butterflies are threatened from climate change. And I know that both of my children studied monarch butterflies in kindergarten. That's a core part of their curriculum. And, you know, they studied them as they migrated down to Mexico and, you know, tracked them and all that stuff. And it was very exciting. And it's sort of, you think, oh, there might be kids who don't know what one is because they're extinct or they're gone or you don't see them because they're, we see them fairly often, but they're in danger.
Well, so now I'm getting waxing nostalgic, but I mean, in the summertime when I was younger, you could go outside and there would be fireflies, lots of fireflies, right? and you'd catch them and get them in a bottle, and there was this big adventure, right? Nowadays, there's LED lawn lamps everywhere, street lights. There's so much more light. The poor firefly that's flashing his little light to try and attract a female can't compete with the LED, right? And they just don't have any. So this magical thing of fireflies in a summer evening slowly evaporates. And you know, who really misses it? Well, nobody, if you didn't see it, you don't really miss it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Yeah, that's true. It is funny that you mentioned that we were camping in Skodak Island State Park this past weekend. And we pulled up and it was just, we pulled up at night and it was just, it was magical because there were there were many fireflies. And as you say that, I'm thinking to myself, oh, right. I haven't seen a firefly in a very, very long time.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that's sad because they really are. That's
oh yeah.
Such a lovely part of life. Yeah.
But I mean, I think just to bring it back, I mean, I think that the point that Dave Roberts is making is that we are being numbed, even as we speak, by the debauchery and corruption of Trump, right? All of a sudden it becomes sort of normalized. In our politics, we're talking about accepting, you know, hundreds of thousands of deaths to the COVID, and somehow say, yeah, okay, that's just how it rolls, right? That's how things are. I mean, I think that you could talk about sort of the racial disparities that we have in our country that we are now somewhat more awake to, but I mean, that was just like, yeah, that's how things are. You never knew anything different. And so how can you challenge it? I mean, there is a risk of losing memory of things that are being lost through this sort of process. And the question is how to fight it, how to somehow stem that loss. And I think that what I saw was that Roberts meant there were two things that I captured that he mentioned. One is through art, right? That somehow capturing these changes and loss in art is one way to try to keep the loss in front of our face. But the other thing is that it's the leadership that are intellectual and understand. That's where you have to look. I mean, this is societal leadership. It's our elected representatives. And of course, that's a depressing thought all by itself, right? But that's where, in some sense, the long-term view of society isn't held in each individual person somehow, because we're all, right? It's the government that has the view that is mandated to worry about these things.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that for sure, having systems that are set up to force people to act on this is unfortunately the point we're at, because we didn't make the right choices earlier.
Right.
But yeah, and I also, just to kind of expand a little bit on art, he mentions there's a team of I guess it's journalists that have chosen four locations around the world: Alaska, Utah, Puerto Rico, and the Marshall Islands. And they're going to visit them every 5 years until 2050, documenting the changes that face the people who live there. So, you know, really getting that sort of longitudinal view can be helpful. And that reminds me of two movies, Chasing Ice and Chasing Coral, that are Chasing Ice. The first is has this stunning photography from James Balog, where he set up time-lapse cameras and caught glaciers as they were melting. And some of the footage he has, he set 40 different many cameras up in all of these different locations. And these are probably some of the last pictures we'll have of some of these glaciers. They may never be back, but they're beautiful, stunning images. And similarly with Chasing Coral, they took pictures of the coral reefs before they were decimated, and they watched them. I mean, one of the photographers in that movie gets so emotionally attached to these corals, and he's just sobbing in the movie because he saw these beautiful, rich coral reefs. And by the time they were done with this movie filming, they were gone. They were decimated, just gone. And, you know, that's powerful. That kind of footage and that kind of like sort of before and after can be really moving.
I mean, in this day and age, nobody needs more grief in their life, right? There's enough bad stuff going on. But I think it's useful to be conscious of these processes, right? And that you know, even as long as you're aware, it's a step to try and push back against it. This, I don't know, what's the word they use? Cultural amnesia or somehow that
generational amnesia.
Generational amnesia, right? That I don't know what my father experienced, right? My son doesn't know what I experienced, right? That's just, you know, how do you preserve that from generation to generation?
Yeah.
Interesting stuff.
You know, just one last little piece about art. I don't have the artist's name off the top of my head, but in Townville, Australia, I think it was, there was an artist who created a statue. It's above water. It's covered in LED lights. I think it's a person made out of LED lights. And the statue changes color based on the water temperature. If it's too hot and it's cooking the coral, the statue turns red. And if it's not, you know. And then the same artist created this underwater sort of living underwater gallery that's actually a substrate to help rebuild the coral reef. It's made out of things that the coral polyps can land on and actually rebuild, in addition to being a statement of art. And, it, you know, it has people looking at microscopes, like as if their life just kind of, they just got flooded out and they're doing what they were doing on land, but now they're underwater. It's really quite stunning. I'll have to, I don't know if I can find an article, maybe we could put a link up to it, but.
That'd be great. Well, I mean, I think that's how you, right. I mean, art, we've said this before, I think we both agreed. Art is the sort of the next big venue in which climate change needs to be addressed, right? The art in the 100 years worth of processing of all this stuff through art.
Right after voting.
Right after voting. That's
vote
the next
thing. Vote for it first and then make art.
First vote.
Support art.
All right. Well, look, well, I tell you what, we will I'll put up links to on the blog at massclimateaction.org/blog. If we can find the link for the underwater coral statues, we'll include it. Right? But I guess that's a measure of how spontaneous the show can be. We end up at things, oh, yeah, we didn't plan on that. Please, you can send an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Please send us your reminiscence, not the right word, your recognition of a change that you might consider generational amnesia, right? That would be an interesting thing for people to think about. Of course, you're listening to this show on your smartphone or your device over some sort of distribution app, but be aware that you can tell all of your friends that they can find the show on their favorite distribution app. Search for the Climate Minute, typically associated with the words Massachusetts Climate Action. We want to thank our dear friend, Mr. D.R. Tucker, for his continuing research support and guiding us as to what the important things are to talk about. So we'll close where we always close, by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. And because of those things, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, a price on carbon, artistic adventures, efforts to combat generational amnesia, all that kind of good stuff, to all put together to safeguard our collective future. So, Mariah, thank you so much for being here.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.